It's Flagrant Howl.
Oh, wow. Look at Jim Pete right now.
Look at him.
We all wore black. Jim Pete brought the sunglasses. Why are we wearing black? Why are we wearing sunglasses, Jim Pete? You want to tell the audience?
Kyle's going to love this. The Timberwolves' future is so bright, I got to wear sunglasses.
I love it. What a crazy last 72 hours. I just got home. I got landed an hour ago back in Portland, so I haven't even listened to the games yet, Jim. So that's like all I'm excited to do tonight is have some wine and rewatch games 1 and 2 and listen to you and Grady call it. Shout out to Grady, by the way. He turned, I think, 27 yesterday. It was a big birthday.
Yeah.
But yeah, what a weekend. You guys were all there. We were there. I'm just happy.
You know who's invited to the parade? Kendrick Ooh. Perkins might be invited.
Oh,
to
yeah.
The
Perkins.
He's been a day one guy this year. Day one Timberwolves guy.
Yeah.
And nobody else would talk about Ryan Russillo,
by the way. Ryan Russillo, you know, Ryan's been a good friend for me just because he's been so complimentary of our broadcast over the years, but he's also been an avid Timberwolf watcher, and he gets it. So there's a few people in the ecosystem of NBA basketball that really kind of get it, and they've kind of gotten what's been happening since Chris Finch has come on board. And I mean, those two are right, man. Perk, man, I'm big Perk, and KG too, man. KG has been all over it.
Yeah.
Well, it's been fun to see the guys who were on board.
I'll say this. I was listening to, I think it was Bill Simmons and KOC this morning on their pod. And I remember almost 2 years ago, and Russillo came around, but Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo did a podcast mocking the idea that the Timberwolves had to hang on to Jaden McDaniels. They were literally, oh, take all of our first round picks, but we got to hang on to Jaden McDaniels. Laugh, 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 laugh. Who's laughing now? Gentlemen, we know Jaden McDaniels isn't laughing. He's just staring straight into the soul of Devin Booker.
I was laughing for 3 hours on Media Row. So I started taking notes in the first quarter. And then when you kind of felt it, I mean, he had, not to recap the whole game, but he kind of had that. Do you remember when he almost dunked on KD like 2 minutes into the game?
Oh, yeah.
Like that's when you could tell that he had a little something going. And then for him to have the best game of his career and probably the biggest spot of his career was pretty cool.
So yeah, I got a question for you guys because I don't know. We've thrown this around over the years, and there have been years where we didn't really have an answer. But, you know, it's one of the things that Kenny Smith has always said about teams that win a championship is you got to have a crazy guy on your team.
Totally.
And, yeah, know, dude.
Vernon Maxwell was that crazy guy for him. Jaden might be our crazy guy.
I think he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, like, here's the other thing. What I was throwing around was you know, there back in my era of the NBA, there were a lot of enforcers in the game. There were a lot of tough guys, and you always wanted to have somebody like who was going to stand up for the superstar players if there was ever a scuffle or a fight. You know, in hockey, they have enforcers. It's part of their job. They got to have those guys on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we got multiple guys that would join the fray.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah. I think Naz Reid's underrated too. Maybe it was game one, but he kind of mixed it up with Eubanks underneath the basket on a possession. Or maybe that was game 8-2. I don't think he likes Eubanks. So Naz would step up in a fight, I think, and be a tough guy. Jaden.
Ant,
for sure. I think Mike would probably separate guys.
Kyle's going to step up and get into the fray.
Rudy would probably throw a punch.
I think Rudy would get in there. I think Monte would get in there. I'm not going to talk about the young guys, and I don't want guys to leave the bench.
Right.
I'm
just saying, like, guys on the floor, like I think there's a lot. I think this team has each other's back, I guess, is my point.
Yeah.
But isn't that, like, to talk about this series, what kind of the difference is? I just watched that Suns team, man. And again, the series isn't over, in my opinion, yet. Like, you don't really start until the home team loses, but they don't have any of those glue guys, Jim. Like, they don't really – who's their tough guy? Like, you know, Bradley Beal has tried to be a tough guy, but it's a lot easier to talk smack when you're, like, winning, like he did in game 82. I don't know. They just don't really have glue guys. They don't have connectors. They don't have Nikhils. I don't think that team's chemistry is anywhere remotely as strong as what Minnesota's is.
You know, I don't – I think, Kyle, you signed – I think you both saw my tweet about what
I
felt like our superpower was, you know?
I personally, if I could describe my thought about that tweet, it'd be like a yawning emoji, Jim.
That's what Patrick, that's what Patrick Roycey did. Yeah, I know. It was pretty funny.
Culture is a two-run double. I don't want to talk about culture.
Yeah, no, it was a yawner for some people. I think if you don't have a soul, maybe like you didn't like it. But basically, I think it was right on, because I think that the best teams that I've been on have been the ones that, you know, you can see that the players like each other. And I think Mike Connolly saying do it for me, and then the way that he played last night, you don't think there's any connection between that. And so there's a buddy of mine, his name is Scott Savor, and Scott's really a great guy. One of the things he does, he works on team building with teams. He actually tries to build cohesion within the fabric of, you know, whatever professional teams all the way down to high school teams and junior high school teams. And so he's got these evaluations that he does when he watches games and when he watches practices. And he has code greens and code reds. And so code greens are situations where you see players on the court when they're playing, where there's touch points. How many high fives are we seeing? Are we seeing guys, you know, in an assist? Are we seeing them acknowledge each other? Are they looking at each other? Are they connecting during a free throw situation? What's going on during timeouts? Are people locked in? Like, you're watching the body language and the connection between the people on the floor. You just said connectors, Kyle. And you do an evaluation. He's doing it like he'll sit and watch a game, and it's like a scorecard. And how many code greens do we have? And then he also evaluates the code reds. And he's looking at how many times the coach is getting pissed at the players. And he's looking at how many times you see tension between players on the floor. Are they arguing? How often do you see them connecting? If there's no connection, like, he's charting all of that. And so he charted game one of the playoffs, and the connection points for the Timberwolves was off the charts. The code greens was incredibly different versus what Phoenix was doing. And the code reds, same thing. You can, you know, you see the separation between these guys on the Phoenix Suns side. So what you're seeing, Kyle, you can actually put, you know, so analytics cool to it, you know,
it's, and awesome.
Isn't it great how you see our bench? I mean, the way our bench interacts with the guys on the floor.
The him, dude, it was early in the game, like within 5 minutes, I can't remember who, somebody made a play, maybe Jaden McDaniels. Every coach, the trainers, the bench, like, everyone gets up and starts walking out onto the court doing the him point. Does that count, by the way, as 14 different greens?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of code greens.
He's looking at all of it. But, like, I just was watching it again last night. Just watch when somebody scores. Are they're all pointing at each other, and they're acknowledging the passes, and they're like doing the tuck, they're like connecting. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day too. Grady and I were talking about Kobe and Jordan and the great greats. And where Ant fits, like, in terms of being a connector as a superstar. Ant isn't an asshole like Jordan was or like Kobe was. Kobe was a very difficult teammate to play with. And so was Michael, obviously. The Last Dance showed that. These guys love Ant. He's got that same killer mentality as those guys have. But I think he's just such an incredible connector, man. The way he played at the end of the second quarter when Minnesota was climbing back into that game, how great was Ant that he didn't try to fight the defense? He was not fighting it, as Finchie was saying. He was connecting, and it was just great basketball.
Yeah, like 15 points, I want to say. He made three shots. That's one of the best games I've ever seen from someone who only made three shots that you would expect to make 10, with some of the rebounds he grabbed, the patience. I mean, they're throwing bodies at him, making the right pass. The defense, you can put him on anyone. I mean, it was, if you just looked at the box score, you would say, hey, Anthony Edwards was kind of off in that game. I don't think he was off. I think he played spectacularly.
The block that he had on Bradley Beal, I think, kind of changed the game in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, like, that was, there was a lot of things that happened within the framework of that game, but that block on Bradley Beal was pretty intimidating, and it was a game changer.
You know what's sweet about that block too, Jim, was he gets that block to end the shot clock, goes out of bounds, but it's a shot clock violation. And I think Beal falls down. So, like, Ant looks at him with just disgust, like real, like you said, alpha dog stuff.
Stop flopping.
And then
three seconds later,
the ant persona, the thing that makes him so awesome and he's so well-rounded, is that 3 seconds later was that viral, he's just dapping up the official. The official was trying to point to him to be like, hey, you need to stand here to inbound the ball. So his hand is out. Zach Zorba's hand is out. And Ant sees a hand. And this team has, talk about green dots, like this team has more handshakes than, you know, a middle school. And Ant just daps up Zach Zorba. Zach Zorba had no idea what was going on, but it was just all encompassing of Ant can be like mother bleeping a guy and then turn to Zach Zorba and be like, hey, what's up, man? And dap him up. So
yeah, dap him. He's literally saying, okay, like inbound the ball right here, you know, Anthony Edwards. And Ant's like, he's so used to dapping.
He just sees a hand, man. Him up.
It's amazing. I mean, I was telling Kyle this after the game. We were just decompressing like 45 minutes after the game, after our little live flagrant. We're doing flagrant howls from courtside right after the game is over, which, by the way, if you're ever wandering around, you want to, if you see us podcasting, Jim, you're welcome to jump in into the fray. But I was just saying, I'm sort of caught between, I don't want to get too out over our skis and just declare it a series over, Wolves in four. But if you're the Suns, how demoralizing must it feel? So you got wiped off the floor in game one in the second half especially, and you go back to the drawing board for 3 days and you say to yourself, okay, what can we, that was an avalanche, what can we change? Well, we got out rebounded 52-28, so let's fix that. They had a lot more energy, they were much more on the attack than us. Let's attack the rim, let's attack their bigs, and let's just bring more energy. And then let's maybe put a phone call into the league so that the officiating can be tightened up a little bit. Make sure Book is getting the calls that he deserves as a superstar. The Suns out-rebounded the Wolves. After the 8-0 hole that they dug to start, I thought they played with a lot more energy. They were taking it to the rim. And the officials called a much tighter game in favor of Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. Anthony Edwards made only 3 shots. Naz Reid did not get going. And they still lost by double digits. I mean, it was, if I'm a Suns fan or in that locker room, I don't know what the answer is. And maybe I'm just being like way too much of a homer with that take right now, but you tell me.
We've spent all this time talking and we haven't even mentioned Jaden McDaniels yet.
Yeah.
I've been waiting.
Yeah.
I'm the only one that was on the island. So no, he was, I actually said, so Jim and Phil, I guess you both thought Ant played well. I was a little more harsh last night when I was talking with Dane. Like I said, he didn't have a good game, but it was because of the expectations now. Like he's only 22, but it's like he can just have 35, 8-7 in a game. So, but I'm with you, Phil. You know, I have Minnesota PTSD and I'm always a little nervous, right? And again, the whole cliche of it doesn't start till the home team loses. But like Carl and Ant went 6-19 last night and you still lose by double digits. I just, the Grayson Allen injury is big.
Yeah.
I thought even when he wasn't making shots, and Jim, you can probably speak to this more, but like he has that gravity of like an elite shooter that just kind of pulls people away. You can't really put a big on Grayson Allen, in my opinion. With him out, like, and they put Royce O'Neal in, like, you can put a big on Royce O'Neal because he's not moving around as much. So I don't know. I don't know if they'll go small. I don't think that's going to work. I don't know what Vogel can do to pivot here.
I think putting Towns on Durant at the start of the series and Carl doing a really great job. Like, I've done a bunch of interviews here. And I think that the idea that Carl as a defender being a factor in the series is kind of a new concept for us. And so Carl, I think he's done a really, really great job, even though KD made shots in game one against him. I thought he gave him a tough look, and then Rudy switching on to him in space, being able to defend on the perimeter. Rudy Gobert's ability to get out on the floor and guard is a game changer, because that's one of the things, if you remember the game last year against Sacramento, where he got played off the floor basically because he couldn't stay in front of anybody in that Sacramento game when they went five out. And so, I mean, he's completely changed because, you know, Chris Finch kind of asked him to meet Minnesota on their own level in terms of what they were trying to do, because the high wall was such a big part of what they did before Rudy came. And Rudy never wanted to play. Rudy always wants to play drop. He wanted everything being channeled to him in the paint. And that's how they played in Utah. He wanted to play like they played in Utah. Finch was like, I get it. We're going to do some of the stuff you did in Utah, but you have to come out and do some of the stuff that we want you to do too. And you got to give Rudy a lot of credit, because Rudy's a monster.
Yeah.
Rudy's a monster. I mean, like his on both ends of the floor. You know what I mean? Like he's, I just can't see him being played off the floor in any scenario. Can you?
Not with these perimeter defenders, right? Because he's not, the problem is 2 years later, as you sort of digest the trade and think back to the Utah Clippers series and then the Utah Mavericks, those were the two series that he got that reputation. Oh, you can't, you get played off the floor. Well, at the end of a highlight where Donovan Mitchell or Joe Ingles or one of their bad perimeter defenders is opening up the gate for a spin cycle possession. Well, at the end of the possession, Rudy's the one in the camera shot, like, you know, flailing and trying to run out to the corner. But the problem gets solved up front on the perimeter with Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards, it seems like. And by the way, Rudy, there's been a few times where Rudy is literally on the perimeter with KD poking the ball away, and then Ant picks it up in game one and dunks it, right? Where he's in the corner guarding Booker, and he's holding his own on the perimeter against these elite wing players. It's crazy.
I also just think, too, offensively, I think he's shooting 86% from the free throw line. So, like, the whole idea that if you get him the ball in, like, spots, you can't just whack him and expect that that's going to be, you know, 1 point. Yeah. It's like he's hitting his free throws. He had that really cool... It's like a Carl like slipped a screen last night, got into the post, and they ran some action. Then Rudy got the ball at the free throw line, and then Carl cut baseline. And Rudy loves a no-look pass. Like, there's not many big guys. Jim, you can talk about this too. Big guys that just want to be guards. When Rudy gets a rebound, like when he had that and one against Nurkic, he just loves to get out in transition. Probably just thinking in my head, like, get it to a guard. But his offense this year is so much better than last year when he would kind of like get the ball in the post and not really know what to do. That's been the biggest change for me, because you knew Gobert was a 3-time defensive player of the year, soon to be 4, but his offensive production is another reason you can't play him off the floor, because he can get buckets.
Yeah, the offensive rebounding is a problem. Yeah, too. You know, he's got a lot of confidence, man, to sprint dribble the ball off the floor. He you know, and I got to tell you, I think, you know, sometimes the other team stop playing. I mean, like, you know, when Jokic took the charge on him, you know, he sprint dribbled up the floor, and I would, you know, I'm sort of curious what's going to happen. I definitely am saying in my head, please, Rudy, give it up. Yep. Like, it's like a train. It's like a car wreck. You can't take your eyes off it. but the other thing to me was, like, you know, my joke with Grady is that I don't trust big guys. When they do this, when big guys do this, trust the big guys. Do not trust them. And, you know, Jeff Newton, I think we're all under the assumption that if Rudy does this, like, Rudy is always doing this, right? He's doing it like 2 minutes into the first quarter. He's doing this, and like, and he's wrong a lot. He's been right a few times, but Jeff Newton, they challenged that call, the charge on, and he was right. And then it ended up being a 3-point play.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all props to Jeff Newton. He's got a pretty good winning percentage on those challenge calls. Yeah. And they all look back at Jeff Newton, man. They're always looking. And that's got to be one of the hardest jobs, to have all those eyes on you in that situation. But the guy that I was really proud of too last night was Mike Conley, though, 36-year-old point guard. The way that he was dishing the basketball, those two passes he had to Rudy in the pocket, led to just massive dunks. It seemed like Mike had more assists than that, but he only had two to Rudy. And it seemed like he was more impactful than that. But, watching the video coming into this series, watching the video from the three games, I felt like Mike needed to be more aggressive. I think we probably talked about this, that he was leaving money on the table in those pick and rolls with Gobert, because they were giving him seams to the basket where he could have attacked Nurkic. And Nurkic was going back to take away the roll, so Mike didn't have the lob, and Mike also wasn't going to attack the rim. He would just probe and he'd dribble back out again. And I'm like, that's lost money right there if you don't take that opportunity. So in game one, he went 2-12, but I love the aggressiveness. Even though he missed the shots, I love that he was taking it. And then last night, he got paid, baby. I mean, that was pretty special for him to do what he did in that game. And like he said, you know, post game, he was telling Leah B, he was saying, nobody wants this more than me, you know, and I believe him.
He, the play of the game might have been when he was parallel with the ground, diving for that ball. I was telling Dane, like, I talked to Jordan Dye, who sits courtside after the game, and there's a moment where after that, because I think Gobert gets the ball and again goes point guard mode and goes to the rim and gets fouled and shoots free throws, and Mike's exhausted, but he like walks over to Jordan Dye and he said that to me, is like, no one wants this more than me. And that was a theme all practice over the week. But then to see him come out, and even in game one where he was missing shots, he missed a bunny around the rim, but then he jumped up and kind of whacked it out of KD's hands and got another possession. So it's just what he does, right? Like he knows that this might be the best team he's ever had and the last good real shot to try to add something to his resume that would probably mint him. So he's doing the little things, and I think everyone else picks up on that as well.
Did you guys notice too? So Leah B asked her first question, and the crowd started to sort of drown it out. I mean, he literally got this crazy standing ovation, and the camera kind of zooms in, and I was looking up at the Jumbotron, and he had to pause. I mean, he got emotional from the crowd response to him, which I guess my next question for Jim, you know, you've been sitting in that arena for 2.5 decades, and there's been some good times, a lot of them during the KG era, but how did, in games one and two, how did that crowd and that atmosphere make you feel as you were taking it in?
Well, it's goosebumps, you know, it really is. And then this whole season's been magical, you know, all the wins on the road going in, you know, I missed those days of walking in the gym with KG and knowing we had a chance to win every single night. And we did a lot of games. And so winning on the road is special. But then coming home to Target Center was special. By the way, I saw Jordan Dye after the game too, Kyle. And I put my hand on his shoulder and he was sopping wet. I was like, dude, how much weight do you lose during a game? Like, all the dancing around, like his sweatshirt was sopping wet. And he was like, he goes, I work hard. And he does. But like, you know, I really don't know how to frame this sometimes because I don't want to slight my relationship with Dave Benz and the stuff that we did together for 10 years. Because Benzie was a great broadcast partner and we did a lot of fun games together. We made a lot of memories and we had great chemistry and I loved the guy a lot, but working with Michael Grady and like the level of excellence that the bravado that he brings and the clarity of and simplicity of his call, he doesn't muddy up his play by play with a bunch of facts and statistics.
Yeah.
He when you talk to him, you know, off and, you know, around practice, he knows all of it, but he doesn't do, it's not what he does. Like, I just find his call to be so entertaining and he's so talented. And so it's like the chemistry of all of it, just the relationship that we have, what we're seeing on the court and the cohesiveness they have. Me and Grady have that, like sitting there watching the game together and calling it for our fans. We just kind of, I don't know. I just don't want it to end, but I know it's going to end. I mean, it could be done in two more games. It could be three more games. I don't know how long it's going to, all I know is you're asking me what it's like to sit up there. It's just one of the best moments of my 26 years of being able to do all this stuff. So it's great.
That's how I felt sitting by Kyle at like 30 minutes after the game too. Just taking it all in as the cleaners are unplugging the internet cords.
It was great. Cool though, because Phil, you live downtown and I was staying downtown the last 5 nights, whatever. Sunday was cool. Like, it was cool to see people that were probably still wearing the same shirt they wore to the game on Saturday at brunch and stuff. Yeah. The city was, I mean, Jim, you've said this a lot, but it is a basketball city. It is a basketball state that takes nothing away from hockey or baseball or football. But when the product is good and the amount of time these fans have waited, I saw one of the PR notes. This was the second time in franchise history that Minnesota's won their first two games of a playoff series. We're getting closer and closer, Phil, that it just be in this year and 2003-04. Like, that's all Timberwolves fans might remember. But this year is on pace and as good so far as that KG magical run. And it's just been awesome. And I'm so happy for the people that go to the games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we talk about the depth of this team, too, over that 2003-04 team. You know, the 2003-04 team, they weren't as talented as this team from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, we were talking about this before the game started the last time we were on together, was how important Nikhil was going to be. I mean, Nikhil, what, he played 30 minutes in that game last night, almost 31, so 30-57. And then Alan Horton had a tweet that said, what's been the impact of Nikhil Alexander Walker? Minnesota's outscored Phoenix by 42 points in his 60 minutes.
Man.
Is that not an X factor?
Yeah. That's crazy. And what's amazing is, so Nikhil, I think his first 8-minute stint or whatever it was, he was like a minus 12 yesterday.
Yeah.
And Nas was like a minus 10. And so that includes like a really bad chunk. Not that it was his fault, but the impact. And this is what we were saying before. I mean, you were, I think we asked you like last Thursday, what is the one ingredient that you would look to maybe increase going into the series? And you said probably Nikhil Alexander Walker. And yeah, it's, man, that dude. I mean, he was a kick-in in that trade too, by the way. Like it was D'Lo out, Conley in, and then, oh, they got somebody else. Who's this other guy? Nikhil Alexander Walker. Okay, cool. I guess he'll just sit
I just was on about an hour ago with Tom Tolbert, who's got his show on KNBR in the Bay Area. Tommy does the radio for the Warriors too. So, and I told him that about, you know, that the Conley Alexander Walker trade for D'Lo might be the greatest trade in Timberwolves history. And then he shot back. He goes, isn't that difficult if you're D'Lo to be involved in two trades where you were the catalyst for the best, one of the best trades in franchise history. Cause that Wiggins Kuminga trade, at least, you know, they got the one ring out of it, right? With Andrew, when he was playing well, Andrew's kind of come back down to earth, but I just think that the D'Lo, you know, not having D'Lo, the chemistry between D'Lo and Rudy was so bad. And
yeah,
D'Lo's moodiness and his sort of, like, I think it was more about his personality than it was even about the way he played. You know, the fact that he didn't play any defense and didn't try and gave up a lot. He was melted on screens. The game plan execution of Mike Conley, even though he's small, Mike's, he if you just watch him, you go back and watch the video, and you watch how when he switches, he still impacts the shot. Or if he gets rolled up by a big, they do a great job of kicking him out to the perimeter. So game plan wise, Mike is just so on point and his compete level is so high. But he also, the important part is he's unlocked Rudy Gobert, which that's made that whole trade worthwhile. And then Nikhil. So yeah, I mean, D'Lo's doing great in LA. Like, you know,
hey, he hit like 7 threes in that game did. The other night. They lost, but yeah.
Okay,
but anyway.
I know we want to respect your time, but I have to do the weekly segment of you played, I didn't, you coached, I didn't. What's Finch telling them now? Because you know what I mean? Like, it's 2-0, and I believe that, like, there's just not a lot of adjustments for the Suns to make, and there's a lot of meat on the bone for Minnesota. But as a coach, what are you telling your players? And as a player that's up 2-0, like, what's kind of going through your mind here? Like, you want to try to, like, put your foot on the neck a little bit and try to close this thing out ASAP?
Yeah, for sure. And the thing he's, you know, the thing that I just hear him saying as they're breaking huddle, because they always circle up before practice and they circle up after practice. And, you know, his main message is to match physicality. It's been one of the biggest and most important things. And really it's true in any series is matching physicality, because it's what we didn't do for three games during the regular season is match physicality, especially from the beginning. But the way that the Wolves have rebounded the basketball, rebounding has been a huge key in this game. And when Ant got off in game one, it was because Minnesota got stops. They got the rebound and he was able to play in a broken floor situation. Right. So he wasn't playing against a set defense that was loaded up against him. So they've got to be able to rebound and run. And you do that with physicality. And I'm just so proud. This is what Grady and I were saying. Grady said, he probably said it 3 or 4 times to me during the game last night. I'm so proud of Jaden. I'm so proud of Jaden. The physicality that Jaden's played with, has just been, it's been unbelievable. So while he's been good, like, you know, I don't think I've ever feel like I get shortchanged by Jaden defensively. Offensively, he's just such a head scratcher. He just is, like, it's so maddening because he's not a corner crasher. He's 6'11". He's got this great athleticism, and he should be the best corner crasher in the NBA. It's so frustrating that he doesn't do it. But the first basket that we got in game one, that shot that he put back against Carl was a total game changer, and it set the tone for that game. And then he had another one last night where he was in the corner and Booker was trying to box him out. He blew right past Booker and got it, and he went and dunked it. You remember the putback he had against Booker? I mean, that's – I mean, it doesn't cost you anything. It's like when a team scores, I always say this too. Like I always implored the teams I've coached with, when the ball goes through the net, whoever the big is or closest person, get it out of the net, get it out of bounds, and just look, and let's get it up the floor click. It doesn't cost you anything to probe and transition like that. The same thing is true with corner crashers. If you're in the corner and the shot goes up, just sprint to the elbow, because if it's a three, it's if they miss, chances are it's going to come and lob back to that free throw line area. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And Jaden, so he just like would jog back, or just he wouldn't half he would half heartedly go after it. So if we're going to get this, if we're going to get this Jaden McDaniels, we can go to the finals. And I said it early on too. I said like in game one or two that this team was good enough to get to the finals. People were freaking out. But I knew it was the most talented team. But Jaden is the key that unlocks, I think, a championship run.
Yeah.
Career high 25 or playoff career high 25 points last night for Jaden, but that's not the stat. You're right, Jim. It's he averages 4 rebounds a game in his career, and he had 5 offensive rebounds last night. Just the ability to crash the glass. Finch joked after the game. Finch did say it was the best game he's ever seen Jaden play, but he's been trying to get Jaden to crash the glass for 250 games, and Jaden kind of joked and acknowledged that too. So you're right. If this, I mean, he's always kind of been the fifth guy to eat in the starting lineup, but offensive rebounds and crashing the glass, you don't need to be spoon-fed for that. That's just want to, and his want to last night was off the charts.
Agreed.
Amen. Amen. At some point, if they keep rocking it here, we do need to do like a Mount Rushmore of championship team crazy guys. You know, like... I mean, Draymond's in the conversation. We brought up some of them. Dennis Rodman in the conversation.
Yeah.
Let's think on that
if,
for
a if they make a run, episode. Man, Jaden's going to get up there. Because last night, if you remember, Nikhil ices the game with that left-handed finish at the rim. Falls out Booker.
He pointed the tunnel to Jaden Booker.
Jaden sprinted in and pointed at the tunnel and said, you, go over there. You're out of here.
It's hilarious, dude. Love it, man. Jim Peterson, Jim Pete Hoops on Twitter and X, and obviously on the Bally's call here with Michael Grady in the first round. We love you, Jim Pete. Thanks, dude.
Phoenix. Love you guys, too. All right, see ya.
All right, see ya, man. Kyle, okay. We're going to stick here for, I don't know, just a few more minutes so we can just keep gushing over the first two games of this series. After we shout out our friends here at Autograph, ooh, we're excited to welcome Autograph into the Flagrant Howls mix here. Autograph is a new app where real fans get unreal rewards by bringing the best content for your team into one space. Autograph is the first app that can recognize and reward fans, turning your passion into access and experiences. Get all your sports content in one place. Read articles from your favorite teams, blogs, publishers directly in the Autograph app. Listen to the top podcasts that talk about your favorite team. Get ranked and level up and see how you stack up across other fans of your team on the leaderboards. You can unlock rewards and signed memorabilia, discounted tickets. Download the free Autograph app. Use the code word SCORE to access the newly launched Timberwolves community and start getting rewarded for the things you already do as a Wolves fan. So again, just download the free Autograph app. Use the code word SCORE, and you get access to the newly launched Timberwolves community. So check it out, the Autograph app, wherever you get your apps on your phone.
All right, so, now that the mature adults are out of the room, can we just get weird? Dane wanted to do a mature pod last night. Jim's always mature and professional. I just want to talk about how cool this weekend was. Because it was, I mean, again, like, I kind of kicked off my trip back to the Midwest Friday night with our live show, and you were there. And just to see all the people that were there, and then to see on Saturday, I had a couple people send me pics from that, from Falling Knife, and there was 1,000 people sitting in lawn chairs outside watching a TV truck. And then to go around the city and to be down there all the time and go into restaurants or whatever, just running errands, and it's like people were everywhere, and it's cool, man. I mean, I didn't know if it would ever happen. I knew that they existed. I know that there's people that support this show and support the team, but it was kind of a pinch me moment. And I think it started to resonate last night late in game two. Cause there was, you talked about this with me. There was a little Tuesday energy to start. Like it was a little like, okay, they're not as desperate. It's a Tuesday. Maybe we can't be as hydrated. By the fourth quarter, that place was as loud, if not louder, than Saturday. And
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know where it stops. I mean, they have to continue to play really good basketball. They have to bring the physicality, like Jim said, be desperate. But I don't know. I saw some souls like leave the opponent's body last night. And I think that's just because you got three dogs on the perimeter, the best defensive rim protector in the league at that behind them, and then just a bunch of different guys that can do a bunch of different things, like Carl and Kyle and Nas and Mike. So
yeah,
I'm emotional.
Dude, it was one of the most fun. I would say if you go back from like game one Saturday, and then if you're a Vikings fan, you got the draft party for people that are fans of both teams. But I love when the city feels this way. And I'm glad that you were in town for a few days to be in the arena. You're going to be in Phoenix for game three here on Friday night. And there's just something, and I know I get it. Like, there's other fan bases that literally look over and be like, what? It's the first round and these idiots are celebrating a game one win like it's the NBA Finals. And I just feel like we are Timberwolves fans, and anyone who's followed this team for any amount of time, we are Eminem at the end of 8 Mile. We know everything you have to say against us. Yeah, we have been a garbage franchise with a weird ownership battle going on right now and a bunch of failed first round picks. And yeah, we passed on Steph Curry twice, once for Johnny Flynn. And this, and that, and the other. And here, we'll toss you the mic. Here, tell these people something they don't know about us now. Let us have this, you know? I do think there's a Suns counterpunch coming. I think there's a chance the Wolves could lose game three because, like, the energy shifts a little bit. They still have two first ballot Hall of Famers out on the wing there in Devin Booker and Kevin Durant that could just go God mode and combine for 80 points in a game. So I do think there's going to be some adversity and a punch of some kind, but I don't think they can do it four times. So at this point, I feel like I've seen enough to say series over in 5-6. I guess I'd be a little surprised at this point if it went 7, and then we get to do the round two thing for the first time since 2003, 2004, and then we'll see how far this thing goes. But like, this is a freaking blast right now. It's the eclipse from last Monday, right? I mean, that's literally once in franchise history has this team advanced beyond the first round, and they are set up to do so here. And as Jim Pete said last week, don't wish time away.
Yep.
Don't wish time away.
And you and I were hanging out a lot, but like, I saw so many people that like would come up and say hi that were like, hey, I flew in from England or like we're from out of the country or had drove at Falling Knife on Friday. This couple had come, big Ant fans, big Timberwolves fans. They drove up from Georgia. And they didn't even go check in at their hotel. They're like, no, we just want to go drink beers and talk about the Wolves. So really cool. And then again, I should have asked Jim this, but I tweeted it after game one, that Ant KD, we talked about this privately, but the Ant KD thing, man, if you're like a basketball junkie, that game one where Ant's just yelling at his idol and KD's like taking it in, kind of like passing the torch a little bit. I said that was one of the coolest sports moments of my life. And again, it kind of popped off on the internet a little bit, probably for the wrong reasons, but a lot of people were saying what you just said, like, okay, loser, are you 17? Like, how is this your first best sports moment? And it's like, A, maybe we should stop policing everyone having fun, and B, yeah, actually, this is one of my best sports moments, and to be there for it and to see, I mean, 19,000 people, there wasn't a seat in the upper deck that was open. They were there early. It was cool, and, you know, worst case scenario, I guess, is that the Wolves do stumble in Phoenix. And you get to have another home game in this first round series. So it's going to be crazy. I thought all the players, you know, just deserved it. And they really talked about post game and all the media stuff. Kind of went out of their way to take a basketball question and be like, yeah, but without the fans tonight, it wouldn't have been. So they acknowledged it too. So cool.
Well, I think the biggest problem for this team in the last two playoff series, Memphis, we'll start with Memphis with a very different roster, by the way, the pre-Gobert the first year they kind of jumped back into being a playoff team. But immaturity was just up and down that roster. You had Anthony Edwards was only 20 years old. Jade McDaniels was only 21 years old. D'Angelo Russell, one of the least mature veteran NBA players, just in terms of like on court, consistency, everything. And you wind up blowing a 26-point lead in game three. It was just like that team was just not ready to advance beyond the first round. But then the immaturity crept up in a couple different ways, I think, against the Nuggets. First of all, like, the Nuggets were the best team in the NBA. They were going to win the championship. But, like, Jaden McDaniels was so immature that he punched a brick wall before the series started and couldn't play. And then you had Gobert and Kyle Anderson, going at it, setting the vibes off in a weird way, and then Gobert gets suspended for a play-in. Like, Anthony Edwards was, again, only 21 years old. There's something. This team has jumped levels in maturity since 2 years ago and last year. I think Mike Conley is a huge reason. Anthony Edwards looks like a 27-year-old with his decision-making out there, not a 22-year-old. He looks like he's played in 15 playoff series. The patience against the double teams. I think Karl-Anthony Towns, yeah, he picked up three fouls in the first quarter, kind of a classic spaz cat, stray voltage foul to put him on the bench, but he comes back, he dials it in, grabs a bunch of big-time rebounds in the third and fourth quarter, hits a bunch of big shots. Like, it doesn't feel like a team. If put it this way, if somehow they don't win this series or they get bounced in the second round or whatever it is, like, I don't think it's going to be because of immaturity. It's going to be because of some sort of matchup problem or an injury. And, you know, I don't even want to speak that into existence, but the maturity jump has been evident here in these first two games.
I'm emotional. It's been great. I think the only thing I took away from last night, because, you know, I still hold the card, I'm still the president, or, you know, I'm on the board of the fan club for Jaden McDaniels, is that I don't know if I'm going to be covering many more of these games, or else I'm just going to embrace the Draymond new media, because I'm just, listen, man, I don't care. I was just cheering on. I'm sitting in the different media seats. They put me up in the rafters, and they give Phil and Judd the good seats, which you deserve, but I was having a ball last night. I caught a T-shirt, by the way, gave it to some kid in a suite. Yeah, well, didn't really catch it.
From Cat's dad, or who threw it up there?
Zinged by my head and hit the wall, and then just kind of fell down. So I caught it in the sense I picked it up off the ground. But, yeah, it's just to think about what could happen if this thing goes to a second round and to see all the different – I mean, it was cool, too, as, like, a Minnesota sports fan on Saturday night to see Justin Jefferson and all the old Wolves and, like, Adrian Peterson. And I think the whole, like, Minnesota Wild team was sitting in Section 116. It was – all these Minnesota athletes that you grew up loving or you love now all came to see this product that you and I talk about every week, and this kid who just continues to ascend well beyond any expectations we had for him when he was drafted in 2020. So,
dude, isn't it kind of funny, though, to hear national media? I understand why national media doesn't talk about the Timberwolves. Mm-hmm. Minneapolis market is not L.A., New York. The franchise has zero history of any positive significance, so I'm not complaining about the lack of coverage. But it is amusing that Anthony Edwards does Anthony Edwards. What he did in game one, he's done like 20 times in the regular season this year, where he just rises up, takes over a game, drops 30 points, whatever it is, right? But now to see the Stephen A. Smiths and pretty much everyone that isn't Kendrick Perkins, who's been talking up the Wolves all season, like, oh my God. Did you see this guy, this Anthony? Wow, I can't believe I picked the Suns to win this series. They've got this Anthony Edwards guy over here, right? Or Jaden McDaniels. Wait, where's he from? Was he a first rounder? Like, people discovering the players on this team for the first time is amusing to me.
I know, right? After decades of futility, it's finally come around a little bit. So one thing, because we're recording this, what day is it? Oh, Wednesday?
It's Wednesday. Ooh,
it's been a tough one. A lot of pizza and beer. I think we're probably, by the time this gets posted, there should be some Sixth Man of the Year news. So that would be fun. Yeah.
We'll interesting.
See what happens.
Two words, perhaps?
Sixth Man. Yeah, two words. Yeah. So I think that gets announced here relatively quick. So by the time this posts, if it does go Nas's way and he wins, which I think if you see some of the ballots so far, it's kind of leaning that way.
Yeah.
Just remember that it was announced after we recorded. But yeah, man, it was great. You great hospitality this week in my favorite city. And I hope that this continues to go. We've joked about it going into June, but it's tough to leave Target Center after a couple of games and not think that this thing's gonna at least extend into May, which is great.
Well, you're gonna get. If you can get, if, let's not take anything for granted here. You got to still win two more games in the series, but Denver is lurking around the corner, although that could be just a wild series. That would be, I don't think Denver really wants that smoke this early, second round, but we can preview that when they actually clinch the series against the Suns here. We don't want to be too presumptive. And we're going to have
snow, though. No more snow. I flew in last Friday.
I think we're clear.
I was in shorts and a long sleeve, and there was snow. Okay,
I think we're clear.
I do have a connection to new ownership, and if they win this battle, I'm going to ask them to fix the weather. Because if this thing goes to round two, all I want to do in the off days is pretend I'm D'Angelo Russell in golf.
So what's on the list of things to fix? The $20 for media meal pregame,
I'm going to get Jim and Grady a raise. I'm going to get them back courtside, so I don't have to sit up in the high seats. We're going to fix the weather. Probably a new arena, but we're going to make sure the people don't have to pay
let's
for that.
Let's privately finance that. Yeah. Let's put together a group for that, for sure.
Maybe a media suite, kind of like the owner suite, where I can go in and get something that's not pizza and beer. Because, again, my stomach is just ravaged. This podcast was brought to you by Pepto-Bismol. Because that's all I drank all weekend.
Well, in fairness, you did. I don't want to throw the establishment under the bus, but we ran into I'll name the first one, which I love. I was at the Loon for like an hour after game one with some friends and my wife, and you came over. We had tabbed out, but you met my wife for the first time and some friends but on the way, so we kind of walked out together, and you said, "Hey, do you guys know where Blankety Blank Bar is?" And I was like, oh, wow, dude. Wow. Okay. We're going to rock it here. And so you went. And then in the morning, I hit you up and I said, hey, our buddy, this is so douchey, but our buddy Kilby, Craig Kilborn, he's in town and he's a friend of the show. And I said, we're putting together some possible brunch plans. And you said, dude, I'm like a bottle of Pepto-Bismol in and I had something gnarly to eat last night. I feel terrible. I was like, did you get food at Blankety Blank Bar last night? Yep.
Yeah. Cool establishment.
There's certain places that you should just go for a cocktail and a conversation and not food.
We might need to talk about bar food one time during an off-season pod. But just imagine if you're wondering where I could have gone. Imagine a cool bar in downtown Minneapolis that the last thing you want to do is walk in with like glasses and a backpack and a sweater on in my little media outfit.
Hey, guys. Hey, you guys see the game? Yeah. Oh, it's crazy.
And then I went home and died. So game three, Phoenix, late one. I think it's a 9:30 tip for you.
Yeah, that's fine because we got night two of the draft in which the Vikings don't have a pick yet, but that's okay. It'll just be a celebration of the Drake May trade up.
So. Okay, cool. So I'm done. So yeah, late Friday game and then Sunday.
So we'll pod
Dane and doing.
We'll pod this weekend. Yep. We'll do. Are we doing a mediation post game? May 1st, May 2nd. Are we gonna do a little live stream?
I'll talk to my people. I did. It was also too just funny seeing everyone there. I don't know. I think that'll get resolved sooner than later, but there was a really well put together article earlier this week from Joe Pompeo or something that kind of sums it all up. I think it was, if you go look on Twitter or something, it's a Substack, but also a podcast, and it does a really good job of just kind of like, we've talked about too much, but here's the brass facts and here's all of the things you need to know. So that was interesting too, but it's all basketball for us right now. But yeah, I'll bring my mic. I'll bring the internet thing and then you and I can do a flagrant house over the weekend.
I have one more dumb question on the ownership thing. So
yeah.
So for the audience, the next step here is it's a mandated mediation that if the two sides disagree on the terms of the contract, then mediation is the first where you bring someone in and you like they guide you through a conversation with the two sides. Is that just going to be the legal representation or is it going to be like a mediation person, lawyers, and then like Mark across the table from Glenn next week? Or do they even bother showing up for mediation?
Well, it is kind of interesting, right, now that you bring that up, because I think mediation is scheduled for May 1st, so that would be next Wednesday, a week from now. Yeah. So hypothetically, game five would be Tuesday.
Because the ownership news always has to drop on a huge game day for the Timberwolves.
Yeah. Yeah, like if the Wolves advance to the second round, I'm just waiting for Glenn Taylor to announce, like, hey, we traded Ant, and I got more chickens. I think mediation, the way I've been under, and again, people are listening to this that are way smarter than me, but I think it's kind of just like, yeah, you send a therapist in and you see like, hey, can we figure this out?
Are you gonna sell the team to these guys or no? No, I'm not.
Can you just get out of the way, Glenn? And then it's probably gonna go to arbitration, which is a little more of a hammer. I would imagine it gets to arbitration. So again, I don't think this is gonna be resolved next Wednesday, but everything you continue to hear and see and feel and all the five senses kind of makes you think that it'll probably go one specific way, but we'll find out. But until then, go Wolves.
Go Wolves. Yeah, we'll see. Wolves in four was the chant. I don't know if it's Wolves in four. We'll see. Go get game three first. If you lose game three, at least come back to Target Center up 3-1 and clinch it game five.
If they win game three, I'm not going to wear a credential on Sunday. I'm going to wear a Timberwolves jersey, and I will meme myself like Suns in four kid did. I will be obliterated down at Talking Stick or whatever, Footprint Arena, because if they win on Friday, man, it is over.
It might be quitting time. for some Phoenix Suns players. Might be quitting time. I made this prediction on Write That Down, Mackey and Judd, today, that I think Luka Garza gets the last points of the series for the Timberwolves.
That'd be such a good degenerate bet. Like, who's the first basket and who's the last? And it's like Wendell Morris plus 1,600. But I'm with you. You saw some souls kind of, you saw Vogel and Beal get into a little bit late game. Booker fouls out. They're all frustrated. I get it, because there's so much physicality. But the Wolves do have to come ready to play on Wednesday. You don't want to give a glimmer of hope. Even last night, Phil Vogel had all the bench guys at the scorer's table, and then the Suns had like a little 5-0 run, and he pulled them. You don't want that from the series. Like, continue to do what you do. Play aggressive defense. Play all 48 minutes. Get contributions from guys that, you know, might not have seen coming. And let's just spend all next week talking about ownership.
Yeah. Amen. Yes. Mediation. Let's go. Let's fire it up. So, okay, the best thing you can do to help us keep growing this podcast is click the like button and the subscribe button on the Score North YouTube channel, and also a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple and or Spotify. Thank you, guys. What a fun weekend at Target Center. He's Kyle Tige. I'm Phil Mackey for Jim Pete. This is a Timberwolves Lifestyle Podcast.